through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Every single weekday at 1 p.m. on Jake and Stacy, we're going to be doing our free agent profiles leading up to the start of free agency on March 17th. Now, we've done Chris Carson, KJ Wright, Benson Mayowa, Quentin Dunbar. We've got a lot of guys to get to, but we're going to go to the offensive side of things today with offensive lineman Ethan Posick.
This is Jake and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run.
Let's go!
Free agent profile.
Ethan Posick was a second-round pick in 2017, 58th overall out of LSU, Go Tigers. Despite being a center with the Tigers, he began his career in Seattle.
Is that a Coach O impression right there?
Go Tigers. It was pretty good.
Not bad.
There are two impressions I can do, which is Shakira and Coach O. I don't choose my impressions.
How about
my impressions,
Coach O doing a Shakira impression?
Go Tigers. Despite being a center with the Tigers and one of the best in the nation, he began his career in Seattle at left guard before switching to right guard. So he kind of bounced around over the following two seasons, serving as the primary backup at all interior offensive line positions. In 2019, though, he ended up on the injured reserve with a back injury. He bounced back in 2020. He actually began his first year as a full-time starter. According to Pro Football Focus, in 932 offensive snaps, Posick allowed just two sacks. Pro Football Focus gave him a 62.4 grade. That's not bad. It is not bad, but it's also not near the top of the pack. Consider the Packers' Corey Linsley graded out at 86.4. Cleveland's J.C. Treader had 81, and Detroit's Frank Ragnow had an 80.3 grade. Those were the top three grades at the position. Now, Jake, the Seahawks are going to have potentially two, departing interior offensive linemen up front. You're going to have Ethan Posick, and you're also going to have Mike Iupati, who we have not gotten to yet, but I think we're both assuming is going to be leaving, and you'll have to find a left guard of your future. So will you have to also find a new center, or should the Seahawks very seriously consider bringing back Posick?
I really think that they do have to consider bringing back Ethan Posick. Whether they do or not remains to be the question. 6'6", 320 pounds. I believe that they finally allowed Ethan Posick to do what he does best, and that is to play center. They drafted him at center. They tried him at right guard. They tried him at right tackle. Didn't really work out, even though he was an athletic guy. And finally, they played him at the position that he knows extremely well, and that is center. And I thought that at the beginning of the year, he did a very good job and was a big surprise. And honestly, one of the biggest surprises was in training camp, the fact that Ethan Posick was running with the ones and never looked back. BJ Finney never competed for the spot. And here in cut number six is because Carroll said that, quite frankly, Posick just ran away with it.
BJ Finney did a good job for us. It was really solid in the competition. Ethan Posick just took the job and owned it. And so it allowed for that opportunity to happen for him to be involved in the trade. So he was a good dude, and we really liked him and glad for all his hard effort and work.
Yeah, that was really nice sentiment there from Pete about BJ Finney. But the reality was is that was a miss, and there was no competition. Ethan Posick was the guy from day one, never looked back. And I think a lot of credit to him for really owning the position and never giving the Seahawks doubt, where they felt like they had to give BJ Finney a try, despite the fact that they'd just given him a pretty decent contract. And here in cut number four, Ethan Posick talking about the change to playing center really helped him out.
Center, it's a little bit more of a phone booth. Obviously guard is a phone booth, but you're a little bit closer at center, and then tackle, you know, there's a lot more space and everything. But I would say, you know, overall, just being well-rounded helps you in just knowing what everybody's doing, where everyone's going, and that's what I would say helps a lot too, is just being very well-rounded.
So with Ethan Posick playing that center position, and as he described it, playing more in a phone booth, he also did a great job of owning protections and making sure that Damian Lewis and whoever was playing at the left guard position really knew what they were doing and what their assignments were going to be. I thought that he did a very good job in the first half of the season. The second half of the season where you started to see his play really deteriorate, and that's my biggest concern about Ethan Posick. I believe he has the size, the athletic ability, the smarts to be able to be a good, solid center for the Seattle Seahawks. But if I'm Mike Solari, I'm Shane Waldron, I'm Andy Dickerson, who just came here to be the run game coordinator, I am trying to evaluate, is Ethan Posick's second half woes, are they fixable? Or is it just the fact that this is the player who Ethan Posick is, and we have maximized his talent and ability? If that's the case, then they need to move on, and they need to try and upgrade via the draft or via free agency. If they believe that his second half woes are definitely correctable, and through playing with a better player at left guard, and in his second year at the position, he can continue to improve and really own that position, then I think you bring him back because he can be an inexpensive option at center, knowing that you're going to make an expense purchased at the left guard position. So you're not going to be able to make big expenditures with center and left guard. You're going to have to pick one and then figure out the inexpensive route with the other position. I think the center and Ethan Posick could be that option for you, Stacey.
Now, while I love the idea of having two LSU Tigers, a.k.a. Tigers, I can't get over it, on your offensive line with Damian Lewis and Ethan Posick, if Ethan Posick signs elsewhere, let's say that happens. Let's say he gets a competitive deal and decides to go to another team. Let's look at a few of the potential free agents available. Now, Corey Linsley, one of the top-graded centers in 2020, Jake, that I read off from Pro Football Focus, he is a free agent. Now, he's going to be more expensive. 30 years old. His salary he's making right now, $8.5 million. Yeah, I would expect that that's a number that's going to be going up, but hopefully not by too much. SpotTrack gives him an estimated average annual salary of $9.7 million. That would still make him one of the higher-paid players on the roster, a little bit closer to a guy like Tyler Lockett, still less than him, but let's say a top eight paid player on the Seahawks roster. He could be one option. You've also got a couple other guys on here. I've seen Austin Blythe as a name thrown around. You have a guy like Tyler Larson in free agency. Alex Mack, though he's 36 years old, I can't see him coming in. But what are the odds that the Seahawks make a move for both a left guard and a center in free agency?
Zero.
Okay.
Absolutely zero. I do not see them doing that. It will be too costly. It'll be too costly to go out and try and acquire good enough players, right? To me, if you're going to divide in free agency that money, that's where this Brandon Shell, BJ Finney, Chance Warmack, Jordan Simmons, you know, the volume versus quality conversation. And I think that this last year was a great illustration of that. Don't divide up your money to get center and guard. I want them to go out and solidify one particular position that you deem is very important, whether that's the left guard to work alongside Dwayne Brown, or whether that's a center that really has that leadership and can control and center everything in the middle of your offensive line. Get great quality at that position and then go via the draft or bring back somebody like Ethan Posick, who's going to be inexpensive, but you truly believe that they can get better, that you can get the most out of that player. I would be okay with that, but there's some other great options in the draft. Quinn Meinerz, who I'm a big fan of, can play left guard or center. I think he's more of a center, though, that could really play that position if you're wanting to go with a pick in the second round of the draft. So overall, I believe that when you're looking at Ethan Posick, it really comes down to, do you believe that Ethan Posick going up against Aaron Donald and some of the better players against Washington and with the 49ers and with the Eagles of Fletcher Cox, do you believe that he can hold his own against some of the true game's elite? Very tough task to do, but can he do that? Can he improve upon that play? Because that's what he was faced with a lot in the second half of the season, did not necessarily handle it the best. And that is going to be my biggest question when it comes to Ethan Posick. Like I said before, the talent, the smarts, the size is all there for Ethan Posick. It's just, how can you put all that together is the biggest question.
Just a few minutes left here. So let's say that we're looking at Seattle's biggest needs in free agency or the draft, their biggest needs this offseason. Now, they have quite a few holes, so I'm just going to go ahead and say four, right? Interior offensive lineman, running back, cornerback, and a wide receiver three slash tight end. Another receiving threat in there, whether it's a premier tight end or whether it's someone who's a wide receiver that can be your number three guy. So if I'm looking at these four groups, what needs to be the number one priority to you? Is it that inside or interior offensive lineman?
Yeah,
I don't even have to say it.
It's not even a question. I think everybody in the world knows what I think in regards to what is the priority, which is the interior of this offensive line and being able to solidify that. And I believe that that will greatly help this offense as a whole take that next step and not go through that second half drought like they did, along with offensive coordinator Shane Waldron at the head of this thing, really being the architect of this offense, changing the approach, changing the way they go about it, and adding that offensive line. It's what's going to help you. It's going to help you in the running game. It's going to help you in the passing game. And when Shane Waldron says he wants defenses to have to defend every blade of grass, well, a great offensive line and a very centered and solid offensive line can get that done. And I don't really think there's much of a debate about it.
You want to know the most interesting thing about our first week of free agent profiles, Jake?
What's that?
Of the five guys, we either said that four of those five guys would probably be coming back or should be signed back or should be a big priority. So we had Ethan Posick as a guy that you should bring back and then spend money at left guard. Don't try to split it up. Don't take the, trying to buy as much as you can possibly get, spread the money around approach. No. Just invest in a good left guard and then bring back Posick.
Well, my preferred route is to spend money at left guard and to draft it. A center
draft
with your
center,
with
have,
your second round
right.
pick. But the reality is, though, is that you're going to have to do everything you can to diversify and better your entire roster. There's legit needs at corner. There's legit needs at building your overall depth at defensive tackle. So in receiver, tight end. So there's a lot of other positions that they could use that second round pick for. So if you want to try and use that second round pick not on your offensive line, that left guard expense and then bringing back Ethan Posick could be an easier route to do.
All right, that was our free agent profile wrapping up the first week with offensive lineman Ethan Posick. Again, you can find all of these profiles on the Jake and Stacey podcast page. You can get that wherever you download your podcasts on your smartphone or your smart speakers, or you can go to 710sports.com, go to the podcast page, click on Jake and Stacey. It's always going to kick off hour three right at 1 p.m. Don't forget, you can also obviously listen live at 1 p.m. for these free agent profiles. All right, it's 1:15. That means it's time for NFL headlines. The 49ers may be forced to keep injured defensive end D Ford on their roster because of an injury guarantee in his contract. So now this is a sticky situation to be in for any team when you're ready to move on from someone or you want to move on from someone and you can't.
Mm-hmm.
That said, the 49ers still in a pretty solid situation with most of their defense. They got a lot of free agents leaving, but you still have Bosa coming back. You have a lot of guys getting healthier. They also don't have a year of work in kind of reps on their bodies, and they would much rather have played. I can guarantee you that. But you're getting a lot of guys healthy back next year.
You are. And with the 49ers being in really bad cap position, not being able to cut somebody like D Ford, who I believe they clearly want to, it really is a bummer for the 49ers. I'm not upset. I'm not too sad for the 49ers. Obviously, them being a division rival of the Seahawks, could care less about their feelings about this, but this is an injury guarantee that this is why players have it on board so that they can be taken care of if this was to occur. It's not something that you typically see often that actually holds a team hostage from holding on to a player. It's actually a way for the team to say, hey, we'll give you kind of a fake guarantee, injury guarantee, but we can still cut you if you're healthy. All right. So, when you see that guaranteed money and a lot of contracts, big time guaranteed money, a lot of those guarantees are tied up in injury guarantees. But D Ford, if he still remains on this roster, he still brings a boost to their edge rush and he'll be a situational pass rusher. But you're right. They will be a group that will be much, much better than what they were a year ago just because of the overall talent that they will have back in their front seven.
Last year was Clowney Watch. This year it's Watt Watch or Watt, as I like to call it, where people are wondering, do you see what I did?
Because
it's Watt, JJ Watch. think about it.
Yep.
To see where the new free agent defensive end is going to land. Now, there have been a couple teams rumored to him. He's been linked to the Steelers because of the familial relationships there, although some people saying, well, maybe he wants to go to a team like the Browns where he can not only have some help and be part of a pass rushing rotation, but also not have to be like second fiddle in any way to his brother or cousin or anything like that. Now, another team that's been thrown into the mix, Jake, the Tennessee Titans, who are in dire need of help up front with their defense. Now, head coach Mike Vrabel, confirmed on Thursday that they've had discussions about adding J.J. Watt. I want you guys to hear this in context, though, okay? Here's his quote. I'm just going to read it. He said, when you go into free agency, there's a lot of things about player acquisition that go into it. What's best for your football team? Cost is part of it. The fit's part of it. And then you need... You mentioned J.J. Watt. There will be other veteran players that become available that we'll have discussions on, and we have had discussions on J.J. Watt. There's a lot of things that go into bringing in free agents, certainly ones that are past 30 or in the back half of their career. Those are all things that you wage and determine. That, to me, doesn't sound like committing in any way to a plan to go for J.J. Watt. I think that because of J.J. Watt's name, this is making some news and the Titans' clear need in their pass rush.
Correct.
I am not any more convinced that J.J. Watt isn't landing with a team like Cleveland now after reading this.
For sure. And the reality is that J.J. Watt, from a lifestyle standpoint, Nashville is a great place to play and it's a great place to live, and it really attracts a lot of players just due to the city of Nashville. But if you're talking about where you can be the most successful and where you can actually compete at a high level, the Browns, which is weird to say, but the Browns definitely are a team that you could go in and contribute in a big way. The Steelers, look, playing second fiddle to your brother, who cares about that? That would be an awesome opportunity to be on the same team with your two brothers. That would be incredible. And trust me, you're not going to play second fiddle to T.J. Watt. Maybe in production, but everybody's going to be paying attention to J.J. Watt. He is one of the true stars in the NFL. And then the other team to me that really makes a lot of sense is the Green Bay Packers. All three places, Stacey, he will be the second to third best pass rusher with either one of those three teams. And I think that they're all tremendous fits for him. So if I'm really wanting to play for a winner and wanting to get my production numbers back up, and not have to play a crazy amount of snaps in at this stage of my career, those three places are clear-cut choice winners.
Wide receiver news in a free agent class that is already packed with stars from top to bottom. That includes high-priced free agents that are going to be way out of Seattle's market and also some pretty nice guys they're going to be able to afford should they choose. Consider adding two more names to this list. One is already a free agent. That's free agent receiver Marvin Jones, who says he wants to sign with a Super Bowl contender. Another name could be added to the list. The Eagles are releasing wide receiver DeSean Jackson.
DeSean Jackson is a player that doesn't surprise me that he is getting released from the Eagles. They are in big-time cap problems. And DeSean Jackson, if they could have released him, if they could release Alshon Jeffrey, if they could release Lane Johnson, get rid of Zach Ertz. I mean, they will do whatever they can to try and offload some of these bigger, older, veteran type of contracts. At this stage of DeSean Jackson's career, I believe he still has the talent and the juice to be able to contribute to a team. But the biggest question is, can he stay healthy? And that's something he has not been able to do very well in the latter years of his career. So I don't expect him to sign for big money somewhere around the NFL. But Marvin Jones, he's a guy that really stands out to me as if you can land Marvin Jones, a very good player with the Lions, I wonder when he says this, I want to sign with a Super Bowl contender, if he's willing to take less money to be able to do that. And that's the biggest question. You can say all you want that you want to be with a Super Bowl contender, but are you willing to take that money to be able to make that happen, or take less money to make it happen? That's the biggest problem with a lot of these free agents. And with these wide receivers and Marvin Jones, they're looking for above average market price, and that's difficult to do.
Now, Jake, what are your thoughts on Trey Lance? Quarterback out of North Dakota State. Do you know a ton about him?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his. Okay. I think that he could be very diverse. I think that he's the third best quarterback in this draft.
Now, how do you feel about facing him in the NFC West? Because our friend of the show, Danny Kelly of TheRinger.com, has his mock draft preview. Now, he does a couple of these. He's all over this kind of stuff for The Ringer. Check out his work if you haven't already. He predicts that the San Francisco 49ers are going to make a move toward their quarterback of the future at pick number 12 overall, go with Trey Lance to replace Jimmy Garoppolo.
Now, I could see that happening.
Wouldn't it be funny if you were like, actually, I think Trey Lance isn't good?
No, he's not good. The 49ers, don't take him. Do not take him.
So he's actually trash.
Yeah. No, he's a very good player. And if I was the 49ers and he was still on the board, I would absolutely take him and dump Garoppolo's salary without question. I don't think Trey Lance is going to last that long. I think you're going to see a big run of quarterbacks in the top 10 of this year's draft. And I truly believe that Trey Lance will be one of those players that gets picked within the top 10, and the 49ers will be left out of that conversation, and he will not be available at that point.
Now, speaking of the 49ers, Gil Brandt of NFL.com ranks his eight candidates to go from worst to first in the 2021 season. The top candidate is obviously the San Francisco 49ers because their biggest issue was injury. It wasn't necessarily coaching. It wasn't necessarily play. They felt like they had a group full of Pro Bowlers and All-Pros on the injured reserve. So easy candidate. Done. Tell me the most likely candidate out of the rest of these teams. You ready? Okay. Atlanta Falcons. Philadelphia Eagles. I mean Philadelphia. Denver Broncos. Bengals. Lions. Jets, Jags. Which of those piqued your interest where you said, I'd buy that. I'd buy stock in the Jags. I'd buy stock in the Eagles.
I'm definitely not buying stock in the Eagles. I think they're in a really bad spot right now. I actually would buy stock in the Jags right now. I think that them getting Trevor Lawrence is a big get for them. I believe that with the cap space that they have and the draft capital that they have, that they will be able to be in a really good position to compete right out of the gate. And you've got a very experienced coaching staff to go along with Urban Meyer. So I'm going to buy stock with the Jags. Are we talking about playoffs this year?
I think he means, well, he said worst to first as a way to spin the title, but I think he just means like one going from bottom of the league to near the top of the league.
Yeah, I think the Jags could be one of those teams that is able to turn things around pretty quickly. And they're not in an overly difficult position or division, I mean. The Colts are a very good team, but as a division as a whole, the Jags, they would have a somewhat of an easy route to get themselves into the playoff conversation.
Now, Curtis, you're very Twitter savvy, all about the Twitter jokes. You've seen a million of them recycled. Did you see the one about the Jacksonville Jaguars? And this is a joke that's been done with someone saying, if you weren't a fan when we were 1-15, don't be a fan when we're 4-12.
It's true, though. Like,
you can't just latch on to this.
You weren't with us shooting in the gym, okay?
All right, coming up at 1:45, we're going to be taking all your questions for What I Need to Know. Now, you guys don't have to wait to send those in. I'm going to start collecting them. So if you want to text them in now, you can go ahead and do it. You have pretty much the rest of the hour. So send those in, 710-710, any and all questions you have. I'm going to start collecting them. If you want to sign off with your name, we'll go ahead and read that one too. Coming up next, we're going to get back to a conversation about the Seahawks defense. Is there an important question we're overlooking here? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
What I need to know right around the corner. Send your questions in. Visit Hard Seltzer text line 710-710. Already seeing some good ones. My personal favorite was Jake secretly working out with Russell Wilson in San Diego. I like it because you told us on the show, I'm here with Russell Wilson in San Diego.
Yeah, but it was a secret.
Yes. It was a secret. Shh, don't tell anyone.
Yeah, I guess it was very a really bad kept secret that I told thousands of people.
It was just between us and people listening on the show. That's it. No, for no one else. No one else's ears. Don't tell anyone. I'm calling an audible. I was going to talk about the Seahawks defense, but let's table this and get back to it because this is a bigger conversation. And we'll bring in like a fun guest for this one because I think this is going to be a good one. Instead, I want to get back to the Fernando Tatis Jr. deal. Not only because this really was grinding my gears, this tweet that I saw the other day, but also because I think it's kind of a cool conversation to have in general about small market teams and how they can build, right? Because the way that the San Diego Padres have been doing this isn't the way that we've seen as far as not keeping your homegrown talent and trying to find value where others don't. This is about just, no, we're going to straight up pay bank for the best players possible, or we're going to make big trades for the best players possible. One of those players, Fernando Tatis Jr., making headlines the other day for his 14-year, $340 million deal. Now, when that came out, there was a tweet that I saw. Again, I feel bad like calling this dude out, like it's personal. It's certainly not. And it's a fair opinion that some other, plenty of people share. So he works on Get Up on ESPN. His name is Paul. He said, Fernando Tatis Jr. playing the next 14 years in the country's number 27 media market on the West Coast is an objectively bad thing for baseball. Thanks. I hate it. This is an awful garbage opinion. Not from a garbage person at all. It's a garbage opinion. Because I see, and we had Mike Salkoff, and he was like, look, more people would know who Fernando Tatis Jr. was, or more people would be watching him, rather, if he was in a bigger market. But isn't that an MLB problem and not a problem with a star being in a small market? Like, if the way that your league is set up, or your media rights, or your streaming situations, or what have you, if the way it's set up is so that people, the more amount of people can watch a Boston Red Sox game versus a Padres game, isn't that a problem with you creating access to your biggest stars? You want stars in your sport. You want your sport to have new blood and new life and new excitement, and yet you're just making it hard for people to watch it. Why is that a problem with the market he's playing in?
Well, because inherently, and that's why I think he said objectively, is that Major League Baseball would make more money if Fernando Tatis was playing with the Yankees or the Red Sox, or insert any other blue-blooded program, Curtis, the Chicago Cubs, right? I mean, that's just the reality. But I think to your point, it makes a ton of sense to me that you would want superstar talent to be littered across baseball, and that it doesn't really matter where the player is playing, that Tatis is a guy, yes, in a, what he said, 25th, 26th 27th. Market.
On the West Coast.
On the West Coast.
Ugh,
that is still the one of the faces of Major League Baseball. Why? Because he brings something different to the table. He brings something that not many players in Major League Baseball actually have, which is a little bit of swag and a little bit of fun that he adds, and a different type of competitive attitude. And Curtis, as you'd mentioned earlier, he's got everybody in the nation talking about one game, a meaningless game.
Yes, a mid-season Padres-Rangers game that would not have been talked about if it weren't for him and if it weren't for his brilliant play and him just kind of throwing the old guard of Major League Baseball out the door and saying, I'm going to play this game how I know how to play it, and play it, you know, just full bore every single night.
Correct. And that is the type of play that gets you to become a star. That's why Ken Griffey Jr., he had swag. He brought something different to the table. His swing was pretty. The way that he played center field was something to watch.
The backwards cap.
Yes, all of it. All of it was something to behold and to be excited to watch every single game. It was must-watch TV. And he did that in Seattle. So it doesn't really matter where the market is, and I agree with you that Major League Baseball, the problem that they have, and someone was mad that I compared Major League Baseball to the NFL. Well, I'm sorry, because it's a great comparison in terms of the fans. An average NFL fan knows more about the 32 teams in its league and the draft position of all 32 teams than Major League Baseball fans do, the average Major League Baseball fan. Why? Because they only care about their team in within their region, and they only care, because they've been taught to only care, about the blue-blooded programs, about the top-marketed programs, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Cubs, so on and so forth. That's all they really know, right? Because that's all that's being put in their face. I mean, can the average baseball fan, I think you asked the question, Stacey, to Curtis, could you give who has the top five picks in the Major League Baseball in the draft? Who has the top five picks in Major League Baseball?
The only one I am certain of is the Pittsburgh Pirates, because they have the number one overall pick. Okay. Other than that, I could tell you maybe the Tigers are within that top five. I couldn't tell you the exact pick.
Meanwhile,
meanwhile, in the NFL, I think everybody knows who the top five picks are.
Certainly the top three.
Definitely the top three. And so now when you look at the difference in terms of the way people watch the game, now you can see why Major League Baseball as a whole, the fandom, the energy, the excitement for the league is not there. So somebody like Fernando Tatis showing up and balling out with the San Diego Padres, I love it. And hopefully that Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez and Kyle Lewis can really come into their own and establish their brands and their identity in Seattle. That's better for the game of baseball as a whole to uplift the entirety of your league rather than just continuing to put on a pedestal some teams rather than your entire league.
Yeah, like is there inherent truth that you will have more exposure to a big market team, whether on national viewership or advertisements or coverage or what have you? Yeah, like there is very much truth to that because there's bias in coverage, but also those teams have historically had more winning records, more World Series, et cetera, what have you. That doesn't mean that you don't then try to build toward a longer life for the sport that you love. And I think that in order to do that, it isn't by harboring all the best talent to those teams. It's by building up great talent and great teams all over the country. So regional fan bases can buy in and have someone to be excited about. And no matter where Fernando Tatis Jr. plays, I love what someone texted in on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line earlier, which is like, I don't think that the whole small market concept matters as much to younger fans. By younger fans, I don't necessarily mean like 8-year-olds watching baseball. I mean like teenagers and young adults. They're going to be caring, like Curtis said, they're going to be caring about a video going around on Twitter of Tatis doing this like super like just bat flip and looking just completely like full of swag and confidence in like slow motion bat flip walking down to first base. I mean, it is a cool look. And are you on the cover of video games? Are you on the cover of magazines? Am I following you on Instagram and seeing your stories and watching your batting practice on social media? I know that there are some people, especially older fans, that hear this and think like, oh God, where is the game going? But when it comes to younger people, like, that's the kind of stuff they care about. They care about like, what are the stars I love doing? Do I relate to them? Where can I follow them? Where can I watch them? They will find that out. It's not going to just be a guy in a big market. And I just, again, like, I will openly admit that this comes from being someone who is born and raised in Washington, someone who's local, that you always carry this kind of like inherent anger of all things when it comes to East Coast bias. Like, I have to be really honest about it. It is my own West Coast bias to be like, of course you think that someone buried on a West Coast team is being a waste of talent because you're mad that you don't have him. Like, you're mad he's not on your team.
But it's also just wrong. If you're just talking about revenue for baseball, then yes, Tatis being with the Yankees, being with the Red Sox, being with the Cubs, being with one of those types of teams is going to make Major League Baseball more money. But it is definitely not bad for baseball. It is not objectively bad for baseball. I believe it makes it even better. And that's the difference in terms of this argument. Money versus, I think, being able to have a talent like Tatis play on the West Coast, play in a different market, it makes your league as a whole better, and they need to do a better job of trying to uplift the rest of Major League Baseball as a whole rather than just a few teams that they really take focus on.
All right, sorry, you guys. I'm sorry, Curtis. I'm cutting into our break here, but listen, here's what I need you to do. It's what I need to know. Send your questions, any and all question, any question you have, 710-710, Vizzy Hard Seltzer. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It's what I need to know. Send your questions into the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710. What I need to know is, let's see, let me find a good one. Say you have to go to a dinner party. And they serve you a food that you hate. Do you man up and eat a healthy portion?
Healthy portion?
So think of a food you hate. What's a food that you hate? Like something that would be like a green bean casserole. Something
I don't know.
You would
anything
like
with anything with onions in it.
Okay, so say they serve up some fried pickled onions, but you are a guest at a home where a dinner is being served and this person has worked on it. You have to eat it, yes?
No, as long as there's other things to compliment.
What if, no, but what if this is their pride and joy and they're like, wait until you have my pickled
onions. If they're
onions.
Watching me like a hawk, then yeah. Yes, I have to try it.
Whew.
But the hopefully what they've done is they have added a bunch of other aspects to the meal. And what you do is you kind of slide those other things and you kind of mesh it in with some of the other food. So it looks like you've eaten some of it, but you're hiding it on your plate so that when you're done and you go to, dump the food, it doesn't look like you didn't eat anything. And I'm not speaking from experience on this very clearly.
Curtis, what's a food you hate?
A food I hate?
Have you had to force anything down ever at a dinner party?
I mean, I've definitely had to do that.
Yeah. Just be polite.
Yeah, I'm a polite house guest. I'm not going to be like, get this out of my face. But anything with like capers on it, I love capers.
I
hate capers.
Here's the rule. If you go to someone's house and they have served you and worked on it, you have to eat it. If you are at like a buffet or something is being catered, you don't have to eat anything you don't want to eat.
Well,
That's the rule.
Of course. But how do you get out of it? If you really don't want to eat it, and they're not paying attention, do you eat it?
From
one time,
yeah.
If
they're not looking at me,
yes.
Well,
if they're not looking,
they'll know. You mean like
how?
if they leave the room and they're like, "I forgot, I have to go take a phone call." Then
no,
yeah, what I'm gonna
I'm
do?
Saying they're at dinner. They're minding their own business.
They'll know.
There's no way.
I have to make an effort to put it on my plate and move it around.
One time, I was at a friend's house, and it wasn't their mom cooking for us. This is when I was a kid. It was their grandma cooking for us, and it was they made chicken salad sandwiches, and I don't like that. But it's like it's their grandma, which is even like tougher
to
say.
You have to do it.
Yeah, so I ate the whole thing, but I was just like,
good job.
Ugh.
What's an item we all purchase that you should not go cheap on? Toilet paper.
Yeah.
Not only because you have to think of no one wants cheap toilet paper, but you'll use a lot more of it. Cheap toilet paper, if you're buying toilet paper
breaking.
Where it's like 8 rolls and it's like $3, you can see through it.
It's not worth it.
No, but people, they sell it.
It's the worst it's the worst thing that you could buy.
Another thing,
completely worth it.
Mattresses?
Do not be cheap on your mattress.
Yeah, you spend a lot of your life on
there. You spend a third of your life on your mattress. Yeah. Don't go cheap.
True. Very true.
Okay. What's the best way to break up with someone? What I need to know, what's the best way to break up
in
with someone?
In person?
Yeah, what? How would
face.
You? I mean, if you've gone on, here's another question. Is it ever appropriate to do the drop-off?
Just like,
can you do the drop-off after a single date?
I'm not feeling this.
No, that's not the drop-off. The drop-off is where you never say anything ever again.
That's ghosting.
Yeah,
ghosting.
That's
is it ever appropriate?
Drop-off.
Well, here's the thing. Is it ever appropriate to ghost, or is it always a messed up thing to do?
Ghosting's not a good thing.
It's never a good thing.
What if you go on one date with someone?
It's still not good.
I've never done it, but I'm just saying.
No, I don't think it's ever good.
Are you
just
planning on doing
somebody.
It? Is that why you're asking for our advice on this?
No, but I have had I've had many people before ask me, like, is it bad if I just don't respond to this guy ever? And it's like, sometimes you need context of like, okay, did you go on a date with him? Was the date a good time? Did you hate it? You know, it's just... Fine. No. Someone said I just aged myself with my comment. What? Young people say the drop off.
No, they don't.
Yes,
no, they
do. It's not like
goes.
I said, oh, when you go cut a rug on a date. Explain the franchise tag, please, and thank you from Parrish in the 206. That's a cool name.
Franchise tag, very simply, if you have a player like Shaquille Griffin and Chris Carson, who is an unrestricted free agent and you want to keep them and not let them hit the open market, you can franchise tag them where you have the rights to that player for 1 year, and that contract that they will be under is an average of the top five contracts at that position.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what a franchise tag is.
Or it's 120% of the previous year's salary, whichever is greater. So when teams use the franchise tag, normally they only do it once, because if you do the franchise tag a second time, you have to do 120% of the previous year's salary. So every year you do a franchise tag, it gets greater and greater and greater. So teams and players don't love doing it. why are you laughing? Do you see a good one on here? By the way, someone said don't save money on paint. That's actually something that my mom would confirm. She always tells me that. Mm. Like, never get cheap paint. It is such a nightmare. And it won't go on evenly. And now I'm just talking about paint. In your opinion, what is your least... Oh, this is interesting. It's going the opposite direction. What I need to know, what's your least favorite French fry? Mine is crinkle. Yeah, crinkle cut fries are trash cans. I also don't like anything that's really thick. I like a 60-40 crisp to potato ratio.
Crinkle fries are great, man.
Yeah, they're...
No, they're too soft.
Especially the thick ones, like the Orido ones you get in the freezer section.
Yeah, those are fire.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah.
What's your least favorite fry?
Least favorite fry.
It's
I don't care if you love all fries.
I'm trying to think.
What?
Of,
not
That's
a
so
fan of
specific.
Theirs.
Specific. What makes theirs different?
They
theirs
just,
are good.
They taste different.
No, they're good.
Nah, I don't know.
Like the real stringy type of fries.
Oh, the shoestring ones.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Those are the best.
Where if you put ketchup on it, it bends the entire fry.
Yes, because they're so tiny. Like, what's the point of this? I have to take a whole handful to make it feel like I have one French fry in my mouth. No, thank you. I'm a steak fries type of guy. Absolutely.
Explain why teams can make trades right now but not sign free agents. This is a great question because a lot of these trades won't be announced until actually free agency. So, like, the Rams are going to... Why are you laughing?
Well, because someone asked if Tracy Frost would have more Twitter followers than Stacy Frost. It's a great question. It's a very good question.
I was my alternate ego, Tracy Frost, on with Danny and Galan earlier today. She's already more popular than me. Go figure. Go figure. All right, that'll do it for us today. You guys have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the rest of your Fridays. Everyone stay safe. Everyone have fun. Don't go anywhere, though. Sports Talk continues with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.